volume competition, you've all seen it. Oh, let's try to find those low competition, high volume words. Sure, those are great. Use it, lean into those, but that's not the whole picture of how you should write your content.
Hi, folks. It's the Quiet Light Podcast with Joe Valley and Mark Dast. Quiet Light Brokerage is the leader in helping entrepreneurs build, buy, and sell their online businesses. Since 2007, we have helped thousands buy and sell online businesses. And now, we're putting our extensive knowledge in your earbuds with our trademark relentless honesty and a few laughs along the way.
I am not a destroyer of companies. I am a liberator of them.
And now, here's Joe and Mark.
So there was a time, Chuck, when early on in Quiet Light Brokerage, when I was doing all of the content marketing for the firm, and I was writing, on average, 8 blog posts or articles per week, averaging about 1,800 to 2,000 words in length. And I underestimated when I started on this kind of venture of, can I do these 8 to 10 per month? I underestimated how much work it was going to be. And it was a lot of work because it's not just writing down your thoughts. It's writing for the web and writing for SEO and understanding what do you write about next. It's amazing how quick writer's block comes in. I know that you had a conversation with Jeff Coyle, a mutual friend of ours from Rhodium and one of the founders of MarketMuse, which is an awesome company, great tool from an SEO and content marketing standpoint. You guys talked about everything content, which is relevant to buyers, right? Anyone looking to acquire a web-based business and grow it. I know it's been a huge part of our marketing plan. What are some of the things that you and Jeff talked about in this conversation?
So I had a great conversation with Jeff, and we were talking about, you know, if you've got a dollar to spend, where to spend it. You know, most people, they're doing, you know, basic keyword research. They're looking for, you know, what's the keyword that's getting the most, searches versus the keyword difficulty. And he takes it like way beyond that. And they're looking at not just the specific keywords, but what keywords are actually tied to other keywords that show that you're an expert in the topic. If I'm talking about, you know, like a specific thing, but I fail to mention other words, Google then thinks that I'm not an expert, because anybody who's an expert would be using these other words. And when you're just looking at keyword tools to look at the ones that are getting the most traffic, you often miss the additional keywords that are in there.
Right. Yeah. And I know, full disclosure, I use MarketMuse with Quiet Light Brokerage and actually with my other company as well. I've used their service. And the general sales pitch is pretty simple, right? It's this idea of setting up pillar pages and having this kind of spokes of the wheel branching out. So the example that they use, I think, in some of the marketing materials is if you're going to have a website on craft beer, you should have a blog post on craft beer, but you should also have an entire section on hops and an entire section on barley and malts. And then even from there, if you want to be all about hops, have an authoritative page on hops, you should also have some satellite pages on imperial hops or these other types of varieties of hops, and being able to have this kind of wheel with different spokes coming out. And you know what? A bunch of SEO tools use this. Like I've been using Sitebulb recently, really cool software, diagrams out your site in this sort of hub sort of format. What MarketMuse does is they take a blog post and a topic. So you say, I want to focus on craft beer. And they say, okay, if you want to really be known as an expert, make sure that you're talking about hops at least 10 or 15 times in this blog post. And make sure that you're also talking about different types of barley. And then you can use that and say, well, okay, well, I'll talk about this in this blog post. I want to write another blog post. It's made for me, and I don't do a lot of the writing anymore, but it makes the content creation process super easy, like the ideation part. I mean, that's the hard part about all of this is how do you come up with new ideas on what you should write about? But I don't want people to think this is just a sales pitch for MarketMuse. It's a great, great piece of software. You know, obviously, I believe in it from that standpoint. But I think from a buyer standpoint and also from a seller standpoint, having a solid content strategy is really, really key. If you were to spend money, Chuck, you've had a bunch of businesses in the past, and I know you've used content. If you're going to spend your money somewhere for a long-term marketing dollar, I'm kind of leading you to the answer here, where would you spend it? Would it be in the content marketing world, or would it be PPC? Or you know, what are the advantages, in your opinion, of this content marketing versus other types of marketing?
Yeah, I mean, it really depends, I think, on the type of business you have. Obviously, if you have a content-related business, then you want to pump out as much quality content as you can. You know, if you've got a e-commerce business, you know, there's different funnels and then buckets maybe that you need to put your money in, but you definitely need to be investing in content. Even on Amazon, right? When you're thinking about like selling something on Amazon, you go to some people's, you know, pages and the content on it is just horrible. And it's so important. You know, one of the things we didn't talk about, but like when you're looking at an Amazon, you know, look at the questions people are asking and then answer those questions, right? So content is definitely important. We talk, you know, just a lot about what you should be writing about next. When you're looking at a competitor, sometimes you can actually see the direction they're going and then beat them and write a bunch of content and actually get in front of them because you looked at their keyword list, you know, and you know the direction they're headed and you can actually get in front of them. So
yeah, really for my money, I think the two areas that are the most important for a marketing strategy, at least long-term return, would be content marketing and CRO, conversion rate optimization. You know, those two things alone have such staying power where you invest now and you're going to benefit for years to come as opposed to PPC, which is great because you can throttle PPC. You know, that's the reason people love it. You can throttle it up and down. You can really, you know, find some hidden gems and it's very immediate. But long-term success, I think, is predicated on this content strategy. Frankly, it's something we've ignored a little bit at Quiet Light. I just got to give you a quick shout out, Chuck, because you are wearing a Quiet Light shirt. So for all those people, you know, that are watching on YouTube, and I know it's not a ton of you that are watching on YouTube, but those that are, you can see that Chuck actually has a really cool shirt. I don't even have a shirt. I know. Did you give me one?
I bought Joe one, but I didn't get you one. So maybe I'll have to get you one as well.
Okay, I think Brad gave me one and it was like enormous. I was swimming in the thing. So
I think that's what happened with Joe. When I bought his, it was too big for him. So let's get it sized.
Make sure you size it down. And hey, if we get a few extras of these, maybe we can set up a contest for people that actually want a Quiet Light. I don't care what you do with it, but you know, kind of fun to give that away as a prize. Let's get into the episode. Content marketing is where I cut my teeth early in the internet world. I love this topic. I think Jeff is one of the smartest people in the industry when it comes to content marketing, what they're doing at MarketMuse, and this is definitely one to learn from.
Yeah, absolutely. And two things before we dive right into it. One, they're giving a special discount. And again, we're not trying to promote it. It's just a good product. If you want to use it, great. But in the show notes, there's going to be a discount code to get a, you know, nice percentage off. And stay tuned till the end of the video, because I also asked Jeff for some additional tools that he likes to use. I always think it's fun to ask entrepreneurs, you know, like what are some, you know, various tools that are unrelated to our discussion for what you're using. So,
all right. Hi, everybody. Chuck Mullins here from Quiet Light Brokerage. And today on the call, we have Jeff Coyle, the co-founder of MarketMuse and product officer?
Yeah, chief product officer. I manage the product, data science, and engineering teams, as well as the marketing team at MarketMuse.
Awesome. So I've known Jeff for a couple of years. We run in the same circles, having been in the internet world for quite a while. Jeff, you want to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I am, as you mentioned, the co-founder and chief product officer for MarketMuse. Prior to this, I've been in the space, as Chuck mentioned, for quite a long time, about 20 years, as scary as that might sound, in the search engine optimization content strategy game. Have generated, you know, like 50 million leads, and that's not an exaggeration for B2B technology, primarily companies in the early part of my career. I worked as an early employee at a company called Knowledge Storm, which sold to TechTarget, which is also a great B2B publisher and an intent data and ABM platform for enterprise and mid-market B2B companies. Worked for them, grew their in-house team and in-house capabilities while I was there. Really focused on driving engaged users through content and content strategy. When I left TechTarget, having already spoken with my co-founder about ways that we could grow MarketMuse, came on as a bit of a late co-founder, and we've since grown the company to almost 50 people. Really, really an amazing story about, you know, growth, building a new category about content strategy. What should you write next? What should you update or optimize next? That's going to have the biggest impact on your business and everything that goes along with that. From, you know, how do I assess my own authority? How do I understand where my gaps are? How do I know where my strengths are? And that's been the mission of our business, is really to tell the story of, I could spend a dollar on content, creating, optimizing, blah, 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 tomorrow. What should it be? And that's what MarketMuse's goal is, to tell that story.
All right. So kind of you alluded to it, but today we'll get you on the call to talk about SEO and maybe more so how content is applicable to SEO. So maybe starting at the base, when somebody either acquires a new site or maybe is looking at a site and trying to think of, how do I grow this site? Like, where's my opportunity? What kind of analysis do you think somebody should start off with?
Well, I think that traditionally, the way that people have assessed sites for their strengths sometimes is only by looking at their current and existing rankings or their historical rankings. So it's a bit of a, you know, kind of a tail wagging the dog assessment of where you're at, where you have been. But it does that as a starting point does provide some value as to where you are. It just doesn't tell typically the entire story about what it means to be about something. So when I'm looking at assessing a site for its, you know, the merits of its, the collection of this content or its inventory of content, what I'm looking at is to say, you know, certainly I want to see performance. I want to look at also things like, you know, that I might get out of my analytics package, you know, engagement. I have to understand the goals of the company, the key performance indicators of the business. Am I driving those things? Can I backpedal out of them? But divorcing those concepts for this point of discussion about conversion rate optimization and such, from a search engine optimization or an authority perspective, I want to see where I've written great content. So how much content have I created on core topics that I care about? When I do cover that those topics, how in depth do I get? And how successful does that, what kind of success does that yield when I write about a concept I care about, when I get deep, when I write high quality content on concepts that I care about? Those two things really tell the story of your existing momentum on a concept. And so that when I'm assessing a site, that's one thing I want to figure out is where do I have momentum? What concepts can I write about and I expect to be successful? And that's stage one.
Before we move on from that one, so how do we gauge that success rate? What do we think is successful? What are the indicators that say, hey, like this, I'm already doing well here or I'm not doing well here?
Absolutely. And that's the hardest part. And to run an effective content marketing team and a content production team for any company, you've got to start at what are the key performance indicators. If I'm an e-commerce site, it's my, you know, the key metrics that I have. It's my average order size. It's my conversion rate to a closed cart. It's my cart abandons. It's my total revenue. If I'm an affiliate site, it might be an RPM metric. And I have to be agnostic of, I want to have agnostic reference of affiliate. And then I want specific combinations of affiliates because sometimes you can actually fake your books accidentally if you've got great affiliates on one page and not great affiliates on another. So it's really about, I think, engagement with affiliate opportunities in addition to revenue. You got to look at both of those things. If you're a publisher, it's going to be RPM, but I also, it's engagement with those pages because, again, your ad server how your ad server validates is, do you have paid ads? So if you have a bunch of house ads and those have a different rate, you want to always account for that because you might have great content that's shooting off impressions, engaged users, clicks and such. So I always like to look at my current value per visit. And then, by the way, if I'm in B2B tech or something, PI attorney, you know, all these places are where MarketMuse does business. So I like to kind of list the full fledged. I'm looking at my conversion to lead. I'm also looking at as far down the funnel as I can track and attribute. But every deal, no matter what, every situation you're looking at, you always want to get it back to current value per visit and aspirational value per visit from a channel. In this case, let's say organic. So if I'm in a scenario, I want to always be able to back that up. That's the only way I can truly define quantified value. And for MarketMuse, obviously, that's the only way we can truly walk in the door and be confident in that ROI analysis. And that's why we've had to do this hundreds of times when we talk to somebody, is to say, how much do you really value each one of these visits? And if you can't answer that question, that's okay. Let's back into it. Let's figure it out. How much does that truly value? Because then if you grow your traffic 20%, you can say, okay, well, that's worth this much to me. How much am I willing to invest in that? And so that's how I define. So that's a long way of answering a short question. That was actually a really good question. But the answer then is my quantified value metric. How much did I publish? How much did I update? Right? How much did those motions cost or those actions cost? And what was the efficiency rate on the content achieving some sort of baseline goal? I like to use recurring traffic from organic search as my goal because I might get a boost from other channels and then it dies off. So I want recurring traffic at or above a particular baseline. So if I wrote 100 articles and 10 of them achieved my baseline, of recurring, ongoing recurring traffic. Well, then I have, you know, 10% efficiency rate in that zone. If I updated 100 articles and 40 of them grew in traffic at or above a particular level, then I've got a 40% efficiency rate on optimization. So when I talk about effectiveness of content, I want to see how much did I publish, how much did I update, and how often did that achieve my goals. I see ranges, by the way, just it scares the crap out of me sometimes, 1 to 2% of efficiency. Like I write 100 articles and only two get rankings quite often. 40 and 45% at best practice. Okay, it's so wide. So you need to take stock today, whomever you are, and say, how often did I write? How often did that yield recurring organic traffic? That's my efficiency rate. Am I in that 10% zone? I got some work to do. Am I above 20, 30, 40? I'm kicking butt. Now, how do I take advantage of that? What do I do? And no matter where you are, there's always steps you can take to really maximize your earn. But it's a great question because as so many people talk about ROI, then they can't explain how they calculate it, you know?
Right. So, and it sounds like what you're saying is maybe like diving into your analytics, but not looking at like how much traffic this page is doing, but what is the segmented traffic? How much is coming from Google or Bing or whatever you're targeting? Maybe you're targeting link acquisition with an article. Then you got to figure out what's the value of a link that's coming in? How many did I get on this piece of content? And then maybe kind of summing up the value of all the different components, but like knowing what your KPIs are for the specific content.
Absolutely. And so the ways that I do that, so it's manageable, the ways that you can do that so it's manageable, because people will be looking at this like, I have thousands of pages or I publish hundreds of pages. How could I possibly do that? It's do it for the site level, do it by site section. It's the way Google thinks about your site anyway. Do it by site section and then take your marquee pages and do a more thorough analysis of them. And marquee could mean your best pages that you feel are the best, but they punched below their weight class. Stuff that you, that does really well, stuff that you invested a lot of money in. So build your class. This is the stuff I'm going to do a deep dive, but I'm also going to get my section level and site level metrics. Okay. You know, an example might be that when Chuck writes an article, he's on a 20% conversion rate to my effectiveness metric. But when, you know, Ron, I don't know who Ron is, but we'll just say Ron, when Ron writes an article, he's 5%. All right. So you're going to get, you can do person level, you can do section level. You can really want to get that slice and dice to know what's the thing that is causing success to happen. Or is it luck? A lot of sites, a lot of B2B companies, they rely on all of their authority for 5-10 pages. And they've got hundreds. Not only is it completely scary and unhealthy from a competitive space situation, but if you're a quiet light listener, it's an opportunity. I mean, and it's an opportunity to see a site that has a risk of ruin. It's an opportunity to see a site that has huge opportunity if they just publish the right content. So all of those things are what we're typically looking at. It's when I publish about, you know, Chevrolets, it does real well. When I publish about smart cars, it doesn't. Okay, so when I get that site, I'm shooting off about Ford and about Dodge as my adjacents. I'm talking about, you know, so it's really getting into when I get in, how can I write about tangential or semantically related concepts, really expand my inventory in ways I know will have more success. And if I do want to cover other things, make a reasonable expectation about investment need, because I can't just go write about kitty cats and crush it. But I know that if I cover, you know, what hubcaps should be on the PT Cruiser, I can. And so those are the types of conceptual analyses, you know, editorial content strategists have been doing with years. Now you have data to support it. And that's where I think that the next phase of great search engine optimization outcomes comes from this type of content strategy analysis, for sure.
And one of the things I was reading the other day was just, and I think everybody already knows this, but they were talking about news websites. And why don't news websites rank for everything? Like, a news website gets all the links because everybody's linking to articles, but yet they don't have the ability to rank for all topics, right? Certain news agencies actually get a lot more traffic for specific topics because that is maybe their topical relevance of their business.
Yeah. Oh, and news is so unique. The news algorithm has so many components. And from a Google News perspective and Google Top Stories, there's components of real-time boosting. There's the concept of the fact that news articles appear in organic search, and they're coming from different channels of information. So they've crossed the chasm from just being news to being appropriate in search results. So then there's the dynamic of some of those items stay forever. Some of them are temporal, and they're going to bounce out when that thing becomes less of a temporal story. We actually have a solution for that at MarketMuse that allows you to analyze both SERPs and overlay analysis, and it's called Newsroom. But that's neither here nor there. But the point of the message is, what if you write news articles, right, about this topic you care about, but there's 4 to 5 aggressive publishers also publishing in that have authority for news, and you're just picking up the scraps. You can see that with solutions that are out there now. You can actually see what those things are, and then tracking that back to assessing performance, right? If I'm looking at my content items and I write 80 articles about some topic, I get no news referrals and I get trickles in of organic, and I'm writing it for the purposes of news. Is that great? Let's say they get other KPIs. Let's say they do gather links and they become powerful, but I'm not winning news. I'm not getting the organic search value that I think I should. How do I use that? How do I use the power that those pages are acquiring to my benefit? And most of the time when I see problematic, content strategy, documented content strategy at a company, they're not looking at their existing power pages. They're not looking at their existing, what content are they publishing that is gaining some value? And how do we use that? Because if I got something that's a link magnet, every SEO in the world would go, we need to do something with that. Okay? But they don't necessarily know what that is. And a lot of times you see these link magnets and they're out there. They got a little bit of traffic up front. They're not valuable enough to get recurring traffic, or it was a temporal stage story. So they don't know what to do. And so weaving that article, weaving that item into some real good content strategy, that's the win. That's my thought, building my thought leadership, building my clusters of content. And hey, this powerful battery, plug the battery in here, and weave it in with internal link, weave it in with appropriate content upgrade opportunities for conversions. There's so many things you can do to repurpose. But when you get a winner, use the winner. And we see that, or there are people who are scared to touch them because they're like, it might break, So these are the main dynamics that we run into with kind of the assessment of authority, and news is a special case. But it's so misunderstood what to do when you get a news winner. Because if you can predict that every time you publish a news story on Linux, you're in the top 3 of Google top stories, like, open that wallet every darn day. And I have, clients that are in that scenario. And we're like, you must write about this every day. And they cringe at first. But I'm like, here's the value that this produces. It's not just traffic. It's all the good stuff that comes as a result of that. So, it's also a long answer to a short question. But I think that's usually a theme with me.
All right. So number 2, you're about to say before I asked you a question.
Oh gosh, I don't even remember what it was now. No, I'm just kidding. So it was kind of the breadth and depth. And then it's the things that you see as being really high quality that you've written. The pillar pieces, the centers of the universe, the things that have acquired the KPI. How are those KPIs? They've acquired some metric that gives you that sense. So we've talked about how your existing momentum. Well, what are these cornerstone pieces? What are these center of the cluster pieces that exist? And how are you using them today? Are you weaving them in? Are you using them to write then support pieces, et cetera? How do you combine that with analysis of your target readership or user or buyer intent? So what's their purchase cycle? Do you have coverage at the information phase? Do you have coverage in the middle of the funnel? Do you have coverage late in the funnel? Do you have post-purchase troubleshooting and adherence and ownership? So when you have a beacon of power, really, that's the time your mirror needs to be the most clear. I always say this, like, stop tilting the mirror your way because you think you have success. Okay, the garbage in the game right now, as I call it, is people looking at search results and saying, I need to write articles just like that search result item. Regardless of whether you want to argue differentiation, it doesn't work, right? It only works if you have existing power. to start to do things like that. What you have to do is to say, do I have, with my site that I'm assessing, do I have coverage at all phases of the cycle that people would care about who are in this motion? I'm research, intent, decision, conversion, adherence, troubleshooting, whatever the metrics of the buying journey would be. And that comes to the why I say it this way, because the pragmatic approach is to say, does this site truly represent my business as an authority and as an expert? What about this collection of pages or this content inventory tells the story that I actually am an expert? And so when you're looking at coverage, you're looking at momentum and like what's been validated that I am an authority. But then it's also going to be like aspirationally, if I truly were an expert, what would I have covered? I can do that by doing competitive analysis, or I can do that by doing semantic analysis and manual research. And so when you cross-reference, the punchline here is cross-reference the aspirational model against what you have, and that's your gap analysis. So think about the outcomes there, right? It's, I have gaps in this part of the buyer journey. I have gaps. I have blind spots. I don't never cover these topics. I have blind spots here. Bah, 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 bah. I also have ranking gaps where I have striking distance keywords, like I'm on page two. That's that the SEO trick, right? Go tell them to update the pages where you're on page two and they'll go up a little and hey, you did your job, right? So, but if you weave that into this type of semantic analysis, this gap analysis, your content strategy becomes 2, 3, 10x more impactful overnight. And so compare that to keyword gap analysis, right? Think about the outcomes. You get a word out of it. You get a word where you're ranking 12th and you think you should rank 5th. Well, now you know why. And then you know what you need to do. And that's the secret here. It's get yourself out of just keywords. Get yourself into the content that's needed to plug the holes.
So we don't know what we don't know. So how do we figure out what the gaps are? Are there tools you can recommend? How do we figure this out?
Yeah, well, I think that there certainly are. And there's obviously not just the ones I represent with MarketMuse, but there are ways that you want to see, you want to be able to look at using your analytics, using any off-the-shelf search engine optimization suite, whether you are a higher-end person in a more enterprise or kind of using an Ahrefs or a SEMrush, looking at those pages, looking at all of your pages, trying to organize them. Or you're looking at, you don't want to buy those things. You've got analytics. You look at something that can crawl and analyze the structure of your site, like a Screaming Frog or a Sitebulb or a solution like that. Get a true understanding about your site and what it's about. What are the things where you have, every time you publish it, it's a winner or more of the time? Versus what's the stuff where you've been tilting at aspirational goals. So, looking at just traffic and revenue, conversions by section or by page type or by publish date, right? Because last year this was under this person's management. This year this is under this person's management. Just a combination of just basic information from analytics and page level data from an Ahrefs or SEMrush can get you at least started. And to start thinking critically about your content inventory. A solution like a MarketMuse obviously is going to give you the sniper rifle to say, go write this page, go fill this gap, but even if you're just looking to get kind of a basic understanding, it can be easily put together to say, gosh, Chuck, I don't know if we should publish any more articles about backgammon. We're a chess site. It just hasn't extended. Okay. But when I write about, particular defenses, we crush it. Why aren't we just leaning into that? So you can make those types of decisions, but then how do you get, will we want to be a backgammon site, right? What are the ways that we can bridge the gap between chess and backgammon? How can we become more of an authority on strategic board games in general, right? So those are the types of questions that out of this type of analysis, if you're real with yourself, you stop publishing stuff that's not going to succeed. You try to figure out why it's not succeeding. That's where a person like, business like ours operates. But there's many of an agency that knows the answer to these questions that can do that introspection, that can do that analysis. But if you're analyzing your site, I think it's truly to step back and say, am I putting myself out there as an expert? Am I really showing it, or was I chasing keywords? And that's always It's always that, oh man, I haven't even thought about it. I've just been looking up keywords, building lists, writing articles, keywords, lists, articles, keywords, lists, are especially in the affiliate side, you know, not knocking always the affiliate, but I see it so much. It clearly comes out of a keyword list. And then I wrote the article. Some of them get linked together. Some of them don't. It's not weaving the web of somebody who actually knows their stuff. Great example of this. I've got a price for every product and the word prices or reviews combination. Bottom of funnel. That encompasses my content strategy against this topic. Good luck with that. And then people wonder why they get hit when there's a quality change in the algorithm. It's because they're looking for that, you know, they're looking for that stuff. Why, you haven't told the story about buying that thing. Why are you the expert on pricing it? It doesn't make sense. And so like, that's the thing that, you know, like, think about, get out of these search engine optimization shoes, get into an editorial shoe, hire an expert to say, hey, if you were writing an inventory of content about, you know, sound bafflers, what would you cover? What are the things you need to know? And then cross-reference that against your stuff. Obviously, there's ways of doing both of those things, taking technology, you know, like what we do or like, you know.
So let's talk about that. I know we don't want to like hardcore pitch your product, right? But you have a great product that I think is a lot of value to a lot of people. So let's talk about like how your product can help it and maybe even hit it as like, these are the things that my product can do. And some of the stuff people can do without the product. So they could do it on their own, but you're offering a service that makes it a lot easier. So let's talk about that.
So if I want to assess the value of a site, for example, if I want to see where there's areas of opportunity to create content or update content and be more successful, if I can get that hit list immediately and go execute on those plans, really move the needle quickly, that is a direct value of what one of the components of MarketMuse Suite. So MarketMuse Suite is a collection of, combination of an automated content inventory and content auditing solution. We'll also take it to the next level and say, after you say, I want to create this page or update this page, we will build a comprehensive content brief for your writer. So it acts as a blueprint or an outline or a brief, if you're familiar with what a brief looks like. And it tells a story so that the writer can be creative, so that the writer can research imagery, so that the writer can research, their sources and doesn't have to worry about, is this thing going to have success after I hit publish? So many writers, the anxiety they have, and this is a huge pain point in the writing space, is, am I doing my keyword research correctly? Ask them. I mean, we've had so many, that's the part I don't know. That's the part I really don't care about. I'm speaking from their standpoint. So take that mystery out of it. Take the SEO mystery out of it. Here's the outline we need you to follow. Be super creative. So we answer that question with that side of marketing. We also have some point applications for doing competitive analysis. So I can look at any search engine result page and understand who's got great content, high quality, who's got weak content, what are the gaps? And if I were going to put out true best-in-class content on this specific intent, this specific topic, what would it look like? Getting into the gritty details.
So what are some of those details?
Yeah. So what are the concepts that need to be included? What are the variants to consider? What are the questions to ask? What are the questions to answer? What are the internal linking things you should do to internally link to other pages to tell the story that this isn't an orphan page out in left field that actually weaves into your existing inventory? And then grading your existing coverage and understanding how to weave those things together. I have this great page that, you know, the one that you talked about, the news one. I want to make sure that it's linked. So all of those things, we have point solutions. So you can do a one page analysis and get recommendations to improve it. You can get that one page analysis and recommendations to make it equal to or better than your competitors every time. You can go head to head or against the whole field. Questions and answers analysis, internal and external linking recommendations. And then we have one of our premium offerings is the newsroom solution, specifically for Google News optimization. But basically the story is, what should I write next? Can you give me details as to how I would execute that so that you're getting me as close as you can to publishing? And then for all of my adjunct workflows, these specific analyses, these one page analysis, we have applications to solve those specific goals to say, okay, why is Quiet Light Brokerage beating me for this topic? Is it because of quality? MarketMuse will tell you. If is it because of links and they have a worst page, ah, darn, they're more authoritative than me. What do I need to do? I need to go write a package of content, tell more of the story that I'm the expert because I don't have that off-page authority. So no matter where you sit, it's giving you the advice as to what those next steps should be. And that's kind of the spirit of what we do.
So one of the examples I've heard you say before is like, you're writing about a specific topic, blue fuzzy widgets. Everybody who writes about blue fuzzy widgets also includes pink monkeys. And if you're not writing about pink monkeys, then you clearly don't know about blue fuzzy widgets. You're not an expert. So maybe can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. So our core technology is built on it. It's a topic modeling technology, and it tells the story of what it means to be an expert on a concept. So it tells me, by analyzing, in some cases, hundreds of thousands or millions of content items, that people who know a lot about blue fuzzy widgets also know a lot about pink monkeys. And so if you write about blue fuzzy widgets and you don't include pink monkeys, you're not telling the story that you're an expert. So often in the market, people have just looked at like the top 10 results to do this assessment for so many reasons that I could get into. There's a great article online called TFIDF is not the answer to your content and SEO problems. And it goes into detail of each one of these logic challenges that exist. It's great for information retrieval. It's been around for 30 something years, obviously still being used. The challenge, though, is don't base your business content strategy and thousands of dollars of investment on that, right? And so what we are able to do is to say that, but we're also then, because we're analyzing so much data, we're able to say that, well, guess what? The top competitors aren't talking about orange donkeys, and it's very relevant. That's a way for you to differentiate yourself. So you're covering the blue fuzzy widgets, you're covering the pink monkeys, and you're cut, but and then you're going to differentiate yourself by also illustrating that you know all about those orange donkeys, and that's what makes you special. And how does that drive back to true expertise? And this we see constantly being successful with the best content strategists. They're writing about that the table stakes content, but they're also illustrating that they really know this stuff. And you know, I always use more detailed examples, but a cool one I always use for content marketing is. A lot of people that write about content strategy don't talk about buyer personas. They don't talk about target audience. They don't talk about the roles on a content strategy team. You know why? Because they're chasing keywords, right? And if you can look at a search engine result page and go, ooh, they're chasing keywords, there's my opportunity. Even if they're 9,000 word articles by HubSpot, if you can find gaps in their game, you can really take advantage of that. And you can punch above your weight. And if you can pop a, you know, a page that's not that authoritative, doesn't have as much traditional off-page authority, link profile, build that beautiful cluster, you can start ranking with undersized off-page pages and sections. And that's niche hunting. You know, that's what the niche hunters talk about. You know, that's what the Ewan Fincers of the world, you know, that's what they're really focusing on. How can I punch above my weight with undervalued off-page sites? That's the way you get there. Great content illustrates that you're an expert every time.
So we're thinking traditional people, when they're thinking about an article to write, they're doing keyword research. They're finding those low difficulty versus high search volume relative. And then they're just going after that. But what they're missing is just because people aren't searching for a specific word doesn't mean that it's not important.
You shouldn't have it in there.
Right. So there are specific words within content that you need to have to show you're an authority, even though people, the average Joe, may not be searching for them.
Exactly right. And that is the funniest thing about to watch the evolution in this market. When we first launched, gosh, now 4 years ago, everyone, when they would see a list of topics, this is the most interesting thing I'll say today, that 4 years ago, they used to look at that list and go, why isn't it sorted by search volume? And I said, because that's irrelevant to what we're trying to do here. We're trying to tell you what it means to write that golden article, right? To be an expert. Why does it matter what search volume is? Because you're so ingrained to use volume and PPC competition, which that's another story for another day. Crazy. Why? Don't do it. By the way, not correlative to organic competition. I can get into that in a second, but they're so ingrained, everybody's so ingrained to use search volume as their North Star that they want everything to have search volume next to it so they can sort by it. Okay. So if you sort by that and then you discredit the stuff on the bottom, all right, That's bananas. If you're thinking about this from a content strategy perspective or from an expertise perspective. And that's what we see time and time again. Fun fact, and I think you've heard me speak about this, totally exploitable. If you see competitors who clearly take topic lists and sort it by search volume, you can, we call it chopping down the tree. You can chop down the tree. Every time it works, because they have this strategy gap. You can predict what they're going to do. You can also chop down the tree in areas where they have blind spots. They will never fill them because they're using search volume as a North Star. Another way to say it is stop using that Foursquare, that volume competition. You've all seen it. Oh, let's try to find those low competition, high volume words. Sure, those are great. Lean into those, but that's not the whole picture of how you should write your content. Because the last thing I'll say about this is if you have no content at one stage of the purchase cycle and you think that you're not at risk with having content at another stage, you got another thing coming. It's going to catch up to you. Someone is going to fill that. Somebody's going to fill those intent gaps and crush you. It's just coming. And we see it with publishers that have been resting on the laurels of their powerful content. They're just getting their tail handed to them by real content strategists every day. So
what are some quick wins you think people could have? Like, okay, I have a site about, let's just say a general content site. You pick the topic.
Yeah.
What are some real quick wins I can get?
I like to call them one page plans. So I'm going to find a page of interest, right? So something that's special about my site, or maybe it's a small collection of pages. This is my page that's, you know, for some reason it's special. It's really long form. It's beautiful. It converts very well.
Are we defining special meaning like it's already getting traffic, yeah, or I just think it's pretty? Like,
I like it, and it gets me some KPI that I think is legitimate and is giving me value. So it could be traffic already. It could be rankings that I am already getting. It ranks for lots of words, right? So that's a signal of comprehensiveness. A quick win could be to look at what that page is ranking for and pick out the words. This is using a SEMrush, using an author. Pick out the words in that list that the page doesn't actually satisfy the user intent for. Go write those pages. Quickest win ever. So that one page plan, I rank this. Here's a great example. Content Marketing Institute. I love that site. They have a wonderful page on LinkedIn profiles. All right. Dominates LinkedIn profile marketing. They also rank for marketing profiles. All right. Not very good. And the site, the page just covers LinkedIn profiles. It doesn't cover generally marketing profiles. So they could beam their Zoom higher and now cover marketing profiles in general and write about other marketing profile presences as a cluster. All boats are going to rise. So you do that exercise. Quick win every time. You can find it. We call them intent mismatches or unaddressed intent plans. Always a win. You can always find one on your site because you've probably got pages that rank for hundreds of things. No one page can answer 100 things beautifully. So when you go write that page, people are like, won't that cannibalize? No. I don't have to explain myself. No.
So the key there is, again, you've got that one page. It's linking for a lot of words. You had tons of words. You'll pick out the few that it's not ranking well for, and then you'll link through that keyword to a new article that is specifically about that content.
Or expand it if it's a fit. If it's not a fit, writing new. But the key is, it's not just that it's not ranking for. I mean, if it's not ranking for, that's important. But it could be ranking reasonably, but not satisfying. Like a user searches for that in Google, and then they land on that page. They're like, this sucks. This isn't what I wanted, right? So it's that intent mismatch. So can you correct that and improve the page? Or do you need to do that in a new creation motion? So that is that's a tried and true technique. That's a recycle, recycle, recycle. Inside, you know, MarketMuji, you just press a button and it tells you those plans, which makes life a lot easier, obviously, but you can do it. It's just that manual labor to use that one technique. And you ask me for a quick one. It's always a quick one. Look for that 100 word or more ranking page. Find the word that read the page. You'd be surprised how many content strategists and SEOs don't actually read their sites. It's amazing. Read the page, know what value it has, And does this page get people to achieve that value? It can also be done on the back end. Andy Crestadina, who works at Orbit Media, he is an expert in Google Analytics and content strategy. He wrote a book called Content Chemistry. Inside his analytics book, parts of the book, it shows you how to do this in Google Analytics by looking at exit rate and engagement gaps. So you can do it there, or you can do it from keywords, or any other ways. But those are some quick ones. Look at your worst exit rates. So many people don't break those down by, they don't cross-reference those two things. So they've got a page, this thing's broken, it's 90% exit rate. But go back to the words that are driving the users to that page. What if all of them are out of alignment? And you could just flash the content, double engagement overnight. So there's so many wins that you can do with just a quick one-page plan analysis. So I like to say, pick one you like, get started, put a few wins on the board, prove it out, and then decide, is this something I want to get serious with and invest in technology that can support it?
Gotcha. Now, when I started first looking at your product a couple of years ago, seeing kind of the wonderful, amazing things you were doing, it was at a price point where I actually kind of like when high price points, because it keeps, you know, on really good things, it keeps other people from being able to do it. But I guess you just launched a new price point for a self-service.
Yeah, it's actually something we've been looking forward to doing. And we are, you know, a mid-market to enterprise, large publisher, people who have really invested in content. That's traditionally been our target market.
Could you give any examples of some big players that you work with?
Yeah, sure. Trying to think of who's on the site. G2 Crowd is a customer, and they're on there. We work with divisions of the Walmart Corporation, Home Depot, large e-commerce, but also just great publishers. Business.com, love them. So there's a lot of people who are publishing content. A lot of people I can't name, and I wish I could. But we've got, if you type in Market Muse case studies, you can find a cool example from Tomorrow's Sleep on that one, and how their site grew from 4,000 to 400,000 in a year with their agency that works with us. So, that was always a big focus of ours. It was make sure that they can write content, make sure that they can update content, that they've committed, they actually believe content can get them there, because then life's going to be a lot easier for everybody. But we then, we also said, let's look in the mirror. I'm always about looking in the mirror and look at the demand that we have. And so we really looked at who's coming in the front door saying, we want to be Market Muse customers. And right now, haven't made that case internally, or I'm not a profile of a customer that can spend, tens or in some cases, hundreds of thousands of dollars on software. And so what we did was we right-sized for a specific target market. We right-sized a self-serve offering. There is also a trial experience that everyone who's listening can go to the site, go to Market Muse trial, go to Market Muse, see the trial, and you'll get an experience with your data. We've actually set this up so you can use your site, optimize a page, create a content brief, update some existing content, like I mentioned, get that content brief. And then there's also a special workflow baked in there that'll amaze you that I'm not allowed to explain, but you see it when you get in there. But you can do a competitive analysis, you can update a page, you get a content brief. By the way, take that with you, it's free, and make that decision of whether you want to become a Market Muse Pro customer, which is our self-serve offering at $4.99 a month. Quiet Light Brokerage podcast list. Quiet Light podcast listeners have a promo, which Chuck will include in his notes, which gets you a discount there. Or if you're a larger team, if you have four writers, if you write 10, 15 articles a month, it's going to make more sense for you to be in one of our other packages, a bronze, a silver, or a gold or higher offering. So it gives you an understanding about the value that we provide, the opportunity to buy, to see if that's a fit, or to immediately recognize, oh gosh, this is what I need for all of my content items. I need one of the larger offerings. So the experience we typically see is that people find, they find the right car on the lot, or they begin using and saying, oh wow, I need more of this. I was successful with my first, the first thing I did. I know this makes sense. Making your content higher quality. That's the fun part about being in Market Muse. It's you never look at it and you're like, oh man, I wish I hadn't made that page better. You're always on this ongoing quest to do a better job, to write better content that resonates more with your audience. And that's what we do every day.
Awesome. So to wrap this up, I always like to ask people, can you give us a few random tools? Doesn't have to be related to what we're talking about, of just things you like to use in your daily work or just regular life. What are some little hacks you may have?
Man, so many. I love this. I have a couple that I'll use. When I was had some personal time management issues, right? I tried everything. I tried boards with Kanban boards and everything. And one thing that helped me analyze where I was spending my time was called Temecular. And it looks like an 8-sided die. And you put stuff on it. And as you're working on stuff, you move the die around. And it seems so, maybe it's because I like touching like things like that. But it really gave me an understanding about where I was spending my time. And I fixed some stuff within MarketMuse, like the business, organizationally, just from that information. So that's a cool one. I love Boomerang. I think it's a beautiful solution for making sure you don't forget stuff if you get a lot of emails. It's a really good productivity tool.
Before we move on from Boomerang, I think, is Google Now have something similar built in where they have the...
They have Don't Let Me Forget This.
Yeah, it's like a little reminder you can set for different dates and it comes back in.
Yeah, Boomerang has some features that I'm so used to, being able to set and forget things, pause. So I don't know if Google's ever going to pause Google. So that's something that, but I like Boomerang. It's not that expensive. You do have to watch your SaaS subscriptions, though. That's another story. Another one I love is FullStory. FullStory isn't, they keep going a little bit more expensive each time you look at them. Good for them. It's like having a DVR on every user that ever comes to your site. You can watch the experiences, you know, obviously anonymized, but you can watch their experiences, build pattern matching, look at segments, and like really get an understanding about why people are doing things. And I think that that's really valuable.
Is that kind of like a, what is it, Crazy Egg? And
Is it similar to a Crazy Egg? More of a Crazy Egg is more like a heat map reporting. They've got this capability, a handful of other solutions that are out there. I just think FullStory has this like really robust, like I can go in and I can find, you know, users that went through this specific sequence and just watch all the sessions. I mean, so many times just learned from that and to really tell the story. And it really is powerful when you are already doing A/B multivariate testing to really catapult that into the next level. I mean, if I told you what conversion rates we have, you'd blow up. But yeah, I mean, you really have to think critically and, you know, fly the flag of your customers so that when you do get these solutions, they don't just sit on the shelf. My goal every day is to make sure that the next article that every one of my clients publish is more successful than it could have been without us. And I think that comes through in our online messaging. It's not just that, you know, we're this secret weapon of elite agencies, which, you know, I know for a while that's what we were. It's that, you know, if you use MarketMuse, your stuff will do better more consistently. And then I will be happy. If it does not happen, then I and our entire team will not be happy. And we hope that our messaging comes through, and we couldn't do it without these other solutions that we work with, like FullStory, like Pendo. Pendo is a beautiful thing. And some other things we use to really dive deep into our customer experience.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate you taking the time to talk with everybody today. Is there a way that people can reach out to you or the company?
Yeah, absolutely. So marketmuse.com, Chuck's going to post a promo code. That's for the MarketMuse Pro self-serve offering, has a discount. You can email me directly, jeff@marketmuse.com, Jeffrey_Coyle on Twitter. I'm pretty active. LinkedIn, please. I typically don't say no unless you send me a weirdo request like that tells me in an unreal way that you like my profile and you love to connect. You know, if it's clear that you've bought or sold a website before in your life, I'm probably going to connect with you and want to talk in any like. So yeah, please reach out and go check out. You know, we have a lot of content. I have a lot of this conversations like this throughout the web that I think can really level up your game, give you the ability to assess deals, you know, quickly. Without just hunches. You got to go with your hunches, but it's nice to have hunches and data.
yeah, for sure. And a quick pro tip from me. If you're trying to get somebody to accept your LinkedIn profile and they don't know who you are, write a message. Like, don't just send the link. Personally, I feel like if I've linked in with somebody and I'm connected, then I'm somewhat vouching for them. So I don't just accept random LinkedIns. Like everybody I've accepted, for the most part, are people I've actually met in person. But then when you go to these conferences and somebody sent me a request and I don't remember them, so it's like, just send a little message with them. Take the 2 seconds to write
something. Yeah, and just make it from the heart. We can smell a rat. Come on. I think Market Muse is cool. Oh, really? Yeah. Okay. Well, I do too. So I guess we are connected on one thing, but you know.
There you go. All right. Well, I appreciate your time and thank you everybody for taking the time to listen and see you soon.
Today's podcast was produced by Podcast Motor and the Quiet Light content team. If you have a suggestion for a future podcast, or if you want to guess the quote from the beginning of the show for a chance at getting a shout out on the pod, email us at podcast@quietlightbrokerage.com. Be sure to follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, and subscribe to our YouTube channel and this show wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.